Hi, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And here comes the cunt. Look at it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the applause and the laughter is for my old buddy, the late Dizzy Gillespie. Not for me. Anyway, welcome back to the second half of the program of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. And before we hear from Skip Rung, who's coming up this half hour, and we check in with our fountain of useless information we have here on the set, we want to take a minute and say goodbye to Clayton Teague and get a final word from him.
As far as things like the NNCO and the overall nanotechnology initiative, I think that I've said many times in my discussions with the NSET subcommittee and other people associated with the nanotechnology initiative that I was continually impressed with the huge capabilities that are within the federal government and that the capabilities that the government has, if it can be pulled together and worked in a harmonious way across all the agencies, are just huge. And it, I think the every effort such as the NNI that can be exploited to really have all the agencies pull together toward common target, we there's just a vast potential within the federal government. Sometimes one of the ways in which it's being realized is through the NNI, but I think sometimes that it's unfortunately not realized as much as it could be.
Well, Dr. Clayton Teague, former director after 8 years of the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office, your generous giving of your time is deeply appreciated by all of us in the audience and your fans everywhere, and we wish you just the happiest of retirement, and we look forward to seeing you in Portland, Oregon in August at the 11th Annual Nanotechnology Conference. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help you?
Okay, old spirit of the fountain, I see you're primed and ready for this one. Ha ha ha. See how you do in this particular case. What evidence in a murder can't be produced if the case is sidelined due to corpus indelicti? Okay. What evidence in a murder can't be produced if the case is sidelined due to corpus indelicti? That's your brain twister for today, old spirit of the fountain.
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Oh, the spirit of the fountain knows all, sees all, and tells all, huh? The evidence in a murder that can't be produced if the case is sidelined due to corpus indelicti? What's the evidence? Well, it's the body, of course. If you said the body, you were correct. All right, now on with our show. One thing people tell us all the time is about how happy they are there's no commercials on this program. Of course, it hasn't always been that way. We were, for the first 2 years of the program was on the air, we were very commercial, and we haven't had commercials in a long time. But we do see the obnoxious commercials, you know, in broadcasting all the time, and we point them out here every once in a while, and you're offered the opportunity to suggest maybe your favorite commercial that we can sort of have fun with on the program. So this is the latest one that has been submitted by a listener.
I've had asthma for 11 years, but my symptoms kept coming back.
Then I found out Advair helps prevent symptoms from happening in the first place.
Or in the second place. Or in the third place.
Kept coming back.
Get out of here. I can't stand it.
Goodbye.
So tell us your annoying commercial. We'll try to feature it here. Right now, I want to introduce you to Skip Rung. He's the president and executive director of the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute. I hope I have that right. Welcome to the program, Skip.
Thank you.
Now, You're going to be giving a talk Friday morning of the conference in Portland on nanotechnology commercialization, and that is a burning issue. I mean, we in this program, that comes up all the time. I mean, what can we do to make nanotechnology commercialized? And give us kind of a preview about how that talk is going to come down.
Well, it's not exactly a talk. I am hosting and chairing a workshop called Commercialization of Nanotechnology. I'll be emceeing it, but we've got expert speakers from the Research University, National Laboratory, Investor, and Commercializer communities to explore issues around that issue, mostly to educate the sorts of people who come to conferences like IEEE Nano, which are more oriented towards research and even academics, rather than business. It's that kind of conference. So we're going to provide a little business component following the end of the conference proper. That is, in fact, what we do at Onami, is commercialize technology by working closely with the research community. And it starts with the recognition that nanotechnology is technology push science. We're discovering very interesting things. We aren't usually starting with a problem in mind or a market in mind. We're developing new technology and science, and it remains to be determined where the valuable markets sufficient to attract investor capital to a new technology are. So bridging that gap is why we have what's called a commercialization gap fund, and have helped start or enable companies that have collectively raised $96 million in Oregon since we started. So we're wanting to help people who are involved in research understand what lies ahead of them if they want to see their technology implemented in the marketplace.
So you're not really going in with answers. You're going in exploring as to where the opportunities can be for a startup nanotechnology type conference businesses. I'm sorry to say, I said conference, I meant businesses, and you're looking to fund exciting new nanotechnology entrepreneurial endeavors. Is that what I'm to understand here with this fund?
For the workshop on August 19th after IEEE Nano, we are, in fact, going in with some answers and experts who are qualified to deliver them. Again, fairly standard knowledge in the early stage investing world. As far as Onami is concerned, we are very much looking for ideas and opportunities to apply them and to use some modest grant funding vehicles to help companies commercializing new technology on their way to private capital investment. So what we're doing in the workshop is an educational service to the constituencies of IEEE Nano. What we do in our day job at Onami is work with inventors and entrepreneurs to get companies going.
Okay, so this is state funding from the state of Oregon for startup technology companies?
The revenue for Onami Inc., which is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, is primarily from the state of Oregon under an administrative services contract to accomplish a couple of economic development related outcomes. In our case, those are two. It's growth of the research enterprise, which is an area where Oregon was historically not as strong as it should be. That's turned around substantially. And the second was commercialization of technology and building of partnerships with industry, that is, partnerships with the researchers in the universities and national lab. The funds are deployed in the form of grants, usually, to researchers at universities who have a good idea and are also able to attract, you know, federal or private funding. So that we call proposal matching. And then the most exciting program, in my opinion, is where we get involved with a commercialization project involving an entrepreneur, a research group, and one of our affiliated university-based facilities that has as its objective the company raising leveraged capital, you know, within a couple of years after we start our project. And again, that's been pretty successful so far.
I'm somewhat familiar with the Texas Emerging Technology Fund, and I wonder if this is probably pretty similar to that. In Texas, there's grant money given to startup firms in all sorts of different technologies, nanotechnology being only one of them, and stipulation that, of course, the firms are operated in the state of Texas, and I presume that that's probably kind of the strings attached to whatever state funds are given to Oregon organizations, too. Is that correct?
That is correct. So because we are operating with state funds for that program, we are, of course, seeking to accomplish economic development outcomes in the state of Oregon. So that means when we fund a GAP project, it has to be an Oregon company. We don't have currently, you know, terms, you know, clawback terms or anything. I mean, we're pretty careful with who we work with. We're smaller, obviously, than the Texas Emerging Technology Fund, which measures in the hundreds of millions. Our funds measure in the single digits of millions. We're also different in that we are dedicated to a particular area of technology, nanoscience and microtechnologies, which can alternatively be described as material science and components for a variety of applications. We work very closely with a community of researchers whom we know intimately, with three shared user facilities and a community, a business community, an entrepreneurial community in Oregon, where we have a very high-touch program. So it's not a case where, as in Texas, where the governor ultimately makes a decision on grants, which can be, as I understand it, for Texas for a wide variety of purposes. Mm-hmm. But we are very tightly focused on early stage startups based on material science and micro devices.
Yeah, you brought up kind of a sticky point there about the governor deciding things in Texas, and he got bit here just a little bit ago on people saying that he's playing favorites for people that were giving him campaign funds. So Perry's got a kind of a crooked nose over that, and that may be the one thing that keeps the governor of Texas out of the race for the Republican presidential nomination. Of course, that's another story. But in your particular case now, I think what I heard you say is in the Oregon Emerging Technology Fund, the Nanoscience and Microtechnologicals Institute, that actually it's got to be nanotechnology or microtechnical and not necessarily other emerging technologies. Is that correct?
Yeah, we don't do social networking or other software. We don't do typically drug discovery unless it has a nanoscience, you know, nanotechnology component to it.
Okay, now then, what's the procedure? You know, let's say that a new emerging nanotechnology type firm decides they want to show up at this conference and hear what you have to say and think, gee whiz, I want to go after some of these startup funds. What do they have to do?
Okay, so we have a very well-described process. It's on our website, among other places. But the first step is to contact me or my GAP fund manager, Dr. Jay Lindquist, and we like to work with people early. It isn't a case where you email a business plan to a VC and you get 15 seconds to make an impression before it either gets a follow-up phone call or gets round filed.
Yeah.
Because our community of people that we work with is relatively small, it's a state of 3.5 million people, we work with people from the very beginning to craft a proposal that meets all our criteria in terms of uses of funds and expected outcomes. And the main expected outcome is that they will have a company that is capable of raising private capital within 18 to 24 months and capable of becoming a significant employer. So we're not interested in lifestyle companies. We're interested in growth opportunities, very similar to venture capital firms. So the process starts working closely with us when a proposal is in a condition that we think has merit. We show it at our quarterly Commercialization Advisory Council meeting, which consists of people who help us, who are investors from venture capital firms or corporate venture arms, about 7 or 8 people, very knowledgeable in a variety of fields, giving us advice and market knowledge that we don't possess ourselves, that is Jay and myself. And then they will give us recommendations in response to the one question we ask, which is, if we fund this project and it meets its technical objectives, can this company go on to be a successful Oregon company, and also to raise private capital? If the answer is yes, we'll proceed towards funding a project. If the answer is no, we might give them one more chance to overcome the weaknesses that were found in their plan. But that's the process, and so far it's worked very well. We've been running it for a little over 4 years, and we've got about $96 million in leverage to show for $4.7 million in gap funds committed.
That is fascinating. I mean, you want to be sure that these companies that you're going to fund and get off the ground have staying power. And so they've got to be attractive to private capital and to also be employers of people there in Oregon that are looking for jobs. And you answered the question that I was going to get to you. How long have you been doing this? You said 4 years. So that means you've got a bit of a track record. Give us some of your better success stories. Can you tell us some of them?
Sure. So, like I said, we have run the Gap Fund for a little over 4 years. Wanami itself is closer to 8 years old, mm-hmm. or 7 years old. Mm-hmm. So our biggest success is a company called Home Dialysis Plus, which raised the largest early-stage financing in the history of Oregon, we think. It's based on some microtechnology and some material science as well that enables a dialysis machine that overcomes a number of problems faced by end-stage renal disease patients owing to some of the limitations of current equipment. Mm-hmm. They raised $50 million in private equity and are making great progress. Another example is, and this gets a little closer to things that might be talked about at an IEEE conference, is Inpria, which is a spin-out of our Center for Green Materials Chemistry, a specialty of us, that we have here in Oregon, that has developed the world's highest performing photoresist. This company of 12 people actually has assignees at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory and IMEC in Europe, and has turned heads in the semiconductor industry because of an extraordinary new inorganic photoresist that is based on a technology platform that our researchers have been working on for several years. They recently raised capital. They aren't disclosing the exact amount, but it's quite an exciting development. We've got several companies that are developing technologies for purifying water or monitoring water quality. One example is Purelytics, which has a fascinating nanotechnology for photocatalysis and other photoactivated processes for taking apart organic contaminants in water and producing, drinkable water or suitable lab water at a much lower cost than other approaches, and with zero water waste and with zero waste streams. So a true green technology. So much so that they were the winner of the National Clean Tech Open in San Jose, California last November 17th. Another example is a company called Zaps Technologies, which uses optical means, optical absorption at several wavelengths, to determine, by examining a large database that was accomplished by this researcher who founded the company over several years, to determine the nature and the quantity of contaminants in water. And that company also recently was funded. And then a third example that is quite an interesting one is Perpetual Battery, a company called Perpetua Power Source Technologies that uses thermoelectrics, which is a type of nanomaterial that converts a thermal difference or thermal energy into electricity. If you can find some thermal differences to harvest, then you can supply a small amount of power, say, to a wireless sensor that communicates its status from time to time, and never have to change the battery. So it's a kind of a natural battery. And there are lots of examples like that. We've got things coming up in grid electrical storage that are very exciting, some surprising approaches to that, medical materials, and more in the area of water.
Fascinating things coming out of Oregon, and many of them may not have come to market or fruition at all had it not been help from the state of Oregon in these early startup funds. That's pretty good stuff. Now, on this panel that you're going to be running on Friday of the conference there in Portland that IEEE is producing, and you're going to have other people on the panel with you. Can you tell us who they are or where they're from, and what we can expect from these panelists?
Well, the session will be, the panel isn't completely populated yet. We still have some invitations out, but I'll mention a couple of people. So the keynote speaker and kickoff speaker will be Jerry Langler, who is one of the co-founders of Mentor Graphics and a general partner with OVP Venture Partners, one of the Northwest's largest venture capital firms, will be leading off. We'll have Doug Kessler, who is the director of the Center for Green Materials Chemistry and also the inventor of the technology platform that produced this exciting photoresist technology. Then we'll have Andrew Grenville, who is the CEO of Inpria, that company that's commercializing that. Andrew was also the director of advanced lithography at Albany Nanotech for a while, and was at that time an assignee from Intel Corporation, so he's a former Intel member of technical staff. And we'll have Dana Bostrom, who has experience from University of Washington and UC Berkeley, now at Portland State University, is their director of industry collaborations, a lot of experience. I think she's also a past president of AUTUM, the Association of University Technology Managers, and several other great people on the panel. Like I say, we're still a couple, 3 months out, so we're doing the final population of the panel, but it's going to be a great workshop, I think.
Obviously, you have some big heavyweights that are going to be on that panel, and we're real excited to hear about the neat things that are going on there. Looking forward, then, to seeing you and the other people on the panel on that Friday morning. That is going to be quite a deal.
Yes, it is.
Well, one thing before we go,
a great IEEE Nano conference as well. There will be even a session that we're chairing in the conference proper on industrial applications and commercialization, and expect there to be some nice papers there. And looking forward to showing people coming out to Portland that the Silicon Forest area is one of the most outstanding regions in the country for nanotechnology. It's home to Intel's most advanced facility, where they're building, as we speak, the D1X facility, which will develop their 14, 15, or 16 nanometer technology, depending on who's speaking, home to Hewlett-Packard's inkjet operations and nanosensor efforts, home to Life Technologies, which is the world leader in quantum dots for biomolecular applications, and home to FEI Corporation, which is the world leader in electron and ion beam tools and a true marquee nanotechnology company. We'll have some industry people on that panel, not yet identified, who invest in technologies, and altogether it should be a great week for nanoscience and innovation of the sort that the United States needs in order to remain competitive.
Well, I'm really glad that you covered that, Skip, because that was a real good plug, a real good publicity there for the conference, and I'm glad that you elaborated on that. All right, well, Skip Rung, President, Executive Director of the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute, you've been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the big nanotechnology conference in August.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I'm afraid that we are running a deficit, an energy deficit in the country, and we're going to come out of this recession and downturn. We're not going to have the infrastructure, and we're not going to have the energy to be able to sustain a growth going forward, and we're going to give up our spot on the ladder of the world to others. Some of the old nuclear plants are looking to get retired, some of the old coal plants. We were requiring between 7,000 and 8,000 megawatts a year of new generation. So we're going to have to fill that in with something. I don't know how to do that today with anything other than coal and gas. My name is Bill McMahon. I'm the president, founder, and CEO of Cologix, located in Charlotte, North Carolina.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.